Hey sports fans, listen up. Did you know that your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? That's why Draft is my favorite fantasy site, because there's no more getting crushed by the pros. And it's not just me, because more than 1 million people have already downloaded Draft too. Play in a real live NBA draft right now and be done in under 5 minutes, and you can get paid the next day. Drafts are filling up every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use my promo code LOCAVS. That's right, you can play in a real money draft for free just by using my promo code LOCAVS, but it gets even better because Draft is so sure you'll love it that they're even offering Lockdown Cavaliers listeners a money-back guarantee up to $100. So search Draft today in your app store or go to draft.com and come play for free right now with the promo code LOCAVS.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone. And welcome to Locked On Cavaliers for Wednesday, January 24th. I am Chris Manning, your host from FearTheSword.com. The Cavs lost on Tuesday night to the San Antonio Spurs, a 114-102 loss. LeBron James leads the way, had a pretty good game, 28 points for him, 10-23 from the field, 9 rebounds, 7 assists. In a game where Isaiah Thomas had 14 points, but was 3-9 from the field, only had 1 assist. Or 2 assists against 3 turnovers in this game. So not necessarily the best game for Isaiah. LaMarcus Aldridge leads San Antonio with 30 points. And Jontae Murray, in his first start with Tony Parker not coming off the bench for that team, scoring 19 points, pulling down 10 boards, and having 6 steals in that game. So a very, very good performance from Murray, from the Spurs, and Aldridge overall. And not a good one for the Cavs. If you read the recap or you're watching the game, you'll notice that the Cavs had a 4-point lead going into the second quarter, and from there it just got worse. They trail at the half by 8, and then the Cavs never were able to come back in this game. A Danny Green 3, about 4 minutes to go, kind of is one of the daggers of this game, and the Cavs were just never really able to fully come back. There's a couple things we're going to get into news-wise, a couple takes. We're not going to do a full recap of this game because I think a lot of the issues that we have seen of late are sort of the same. J.R. Smith and Jay Crowder not playing well. We're going to talk about Isaiah. I'm going to talk about Isaiah because this is someone that I think is having these issues, and he's worth getting into. But a lot of the same issues that we've seen, I think, popped up. Of note, Channing Frye didn't play in this game because of some sort of injury, so he was out. And Amon Shumpert made his return, only played 6 minutes, and he did pick up 2 fouls in those 6 minutes. So we'll see, probably a minute restriction since he was coming back from that knee scope. But the Cavs, to start off, LeBron James is the guy here that deserves, I think, is the only real player or personality in this group that deserves praise. He becomes the seventh player ever and the youngest ever to reach 30,000 career points when he hit that 2-pointer in the first quarter. This is a monumental moment for LeBron. This is someone that doesn't talk about being a scorer and talks about wanting to just make everybody better. For him to do this, yes, it helps that he came into the league when he did, but he beat Kobe Bryant by a full 100 days. And this is someone that I think this is just another case for him in the GOAT category of being the best of all time. And I don't want to have that discussion here, but LeBron James, that's just another big moment in his career. It is something that you saw the Instagram post that he put up. This is a guy that is still playing very, very high basketball, and that's part of, and yes, he has his defensive issues and he doesn't close out on guys hard all the time, and there are things that I think are, you know, very fair to point out about him and the way he's playing, because he's not blameless in what is going on with the Cavs right now. But you are looking at someone who, you know, I think is still, like, worth going in for and banking on and trying to build around and win with. And yes, the Cavs are facing these tough decisions, but he's still good enough, and I don't think the problems are really about LeBron. And that should really go without being said, but I just wanted to make sure that on a night where LeBron is doing what he did and is really the only Cav that had a good game, even though he didn't always have great moments, he was still very good in general. To look at Isaiah, I tweeted this, and I would love to hear people's thoughts on this. So if you have some thoughts, I will read them on a future show. You can email us to lockdowncavs@gmail.com or tweet me, and I'll shout you out on the show as well. But I think Isaiah, he's looking like 50% or something right now with that hip. He does not look like the same Isaiah Thomas that we are used to seeing, that we have seen really dominate teams. Was one of the best players in the league last year for the Boston Celtics, and he looked really good to start off. And maybe that was adrenaline, maybe that was just some sort of push for him. But you're seeing a guy who does not look right now, and I think it's something he kind of laughed off when he was asked about it. But I think the G League might have been a good thing for him, and maybe it's too late to go do that now. But I think Isaiah would really benefit from some G League experience, from some reps against not full speed. This is a guy that just doesn't look comfortable yet. And yes, the Spurs are a smart team, and if you really want to, you could make this mental argument that it's just one game and everything. But I think what you've seen with him is much bigger than one game. You're seeing a guy that doesn't have his rhythm back, that doesn't look like he's even close to being the guy he was last year. And with Jay, with the Nets pick not being quite as good as the Cavs hope, and the Jay Crowder acquisition, which you'll hear about more on tomorrow's show, not necessarily, I think, living up to what the Cavs had hoped, but you have to wonder if maybe they should have just held on to Kyrie Irving and just sucked that up. Maybe it got awkward, it could have been tense, but, at least look at the year Kyrie's having, and you know what he's already done in this league and with LeBron, so maybe it would have been worth trying to make that work for 1 year and just think about how the Spurs handled LaMarcus Aldridge's trade demands and talking that out. Maybe there could have been something there, but with what they have now, I think they have to figure something out with Isaiah. I don't know if you can send him to the G League now. I don't know what you can do to make it easier for him, but he does not look right. He committed some travels that seemed very uncharacteristic. You had a guy that is just decision making seems off. There's everything about Isaiah Thomas right now is off, and they have to fix it. He is so important to what they're doing. If you're gonna make him almost the number two and kind of push Kevin Love out a little bit, I think you have to get this to work. And a 3 of 9, 0-2 from three, one or two assists depending on what box score is actually correct, because I've seen it both. The worst plus minus amongst the starters, a defensive liability. This is just a bad game. He's had a lot of bad games, and there's a lot to worry about here, I think, with Isaiah right now. I don't think what he was to start has really held up, and we're facing a very interesting crossroads for the Cavs where, we don't know exactly what is going to go forward with this team, what is going to happen with this team, and how they can improve on Isaiah from here. It's going to be a very interesting question where you'll hear George Hill chat with, in the second half of this podcast, Mike Zavgano, in a segment I already recorded, will be there, and you'll hear about him and maybe what he could provide. So if that's something they do, maybe that helps Isaiah. I don't know what that means for everybody else. It's complicated, but we will see. A couple other notes. I think without Channing Frye and just with the lack of spacing, I think that's some of the reasons why you're not seeing Kyle Korver play the way you would hope he would. Kyle Korver is 1 of 4 in this game. He has not had any recent games, it feels like, where he's just kind of outshot people and dominated in a way we'd seen him do, and I think that hurts. I think they miss his spacing. They miss everything he was doing for this team. And I think if you're looking at Korver, I think you're looking at a guy that they need to find some way. And I think if you're looking, I can't believe I'm saying this, considering where they've come from in their roster. But I think if they're looking at other things, maybe George Hill's shooting, even if it's not a super high elite shooting as a skill, maybe that could help it to some degree. I think that these units that Tyronn Lue is using are just not really working. There's no spacing. Tristan's playing a little bit better, but he didn't rebound in this game. I think just one board. There's just everything's just kind of lacking, and that leads us to the I think what is so far at least the most notable comment of the night. Now I'm recording this. I'm going to NPR timestamp this at 11:09 p.m. on Tuesday night. That is when you're hearing me talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers. We have not gotten context on this. We have not gotten full on. I have not at least seen the full-on quote or anything else or any additional reporting. So when you wake up in the morning and listen to this podcast, you may hear something different, but per Dave McMenamin from ESPN and other reporters like Jason Lloyd and Joe Varden on the scene in San Antonio and Rachel Nichols, Tyronn Lue has said that he's going to make a change to his lineups. Now, does that mean the starting lineup? Does that mean rotations? Could it mean everything? Could it mean different things? What I have speculated in my news write-up at Through the Sword was, you know, maybe Tristan Thompson goes back into the starting lineup. Maybe Amon Shumpert will start instead of Jarius Smith. Maybe Isaiah will go to the bench for now. Maybe it's something completely different. We don't know. Lue is a very tight-lipped guy, but this is a Cavs team that has lost 10 of its last 13. They are in every, you know this if you watch this team or follow this team on Twitter. This team is in it right now. They are bad. They are playing awful basketball. There's no reason to really feel good about them right now. I think this is bad. This is not just another January slump. I think this team is genuinely in trouble and in facing something. And I think that you're going to start seeing changes. And I don't know how far this goes. I don't know, you know, when trades will come up. We've heard that these trades are close and that you could have a roster adjusted soon. But, you know, I think Tyronn Lue making changes, we'll see those Friday, is a good thing. We just don't know what they are. We don't know what they're going to mean tactically for the defense, which has been bad, for the offense, which has been stagnant. You know, who and how those changes will reverberate across the whole roster. How does this affect rotations? How does this affect when guys are going to come in? How does this affect, you know, guys like that are on the edge of the rotation? And then you're going to have to acclimate new guys if you acquire them anyway. So does this set up the impending move? Is he hinting at something there? We don't know. And we're going to find out again. It's a little after 11 o'clock when I'm recording this. Keep that timestamp in mind. But things are going to change. And I think maybe he should have done so sooner. I'm very curious to see what these changes are. I will be there Friday. So I'm curious to see what he has to say pregame and if he hints at them before. But look out for that. That is kind of the big actual news item coming out of this game. There's not going to be, you know, I think a happy moment for this team. This should have been a night where you celebrate LeBron and the Cavs put out this video and of all these NBA personalities and former teammates and former coaches and including Richard Jefferson and Antoine Jameson and Mike Brown congratulating LeBron. And instead, I think we're going to be focusing on just how in it this team really is. This history night of LeBron is frankly going to be overshadowed for the time being, at least by how incompetent this Cavs team is right now. Everything else that happened, Kevin Love is now an All-Star. He joins Eastern Conference reserves. We will find out the results of the draft this week, so we'll find out if LeBron took him. There are some of the other people on the roster from the East: Victor Oladipo, Chris Porzingis, Al Horford, Bradley Beal, John Wall, Kyle Lowry, and then you have Draymond, Russell Westbrook, Klay Thompson, Towns, Butler, Aldridge, Lillard from the West. So you have that is your All-Star lineup. That means no Paul George, no Lou Williams, you know, various other guys. No Goran Dragic, who I think has been great this year. Those are some of the names that are out there. But this is where we're at right now. You'll hear, again, the second half of the podcast, a full-on breakdown of Cavs Spurs. I was planning on that being the second half of the show, but Mike and I think this is just more pressing, what we're talking about here. And I hope you guys, if you have any thoughts, again, email me, tweet me, lockedoncavs@gmail.com, @lockedoncavs, or @CWRights on Twitter. Please go find the podcast on iTunes, on Spotify, on Stitcher, on Overcast, wherever you get your podcasts. Go find Lockdown Cavs. We'll be back tomorrow with a TBD, with that Jay Crowder, J.R. Smith episode. Have something Friday to preview Cavs Pacers as well. But the Cavs lose their 10th of their last 13, 7 of their last 10, second in a row, 114-102 in San Antonio on the night LeBron James scores his 30,000th career point and it becomes the seventh player ever and the youngest ever to do so. Cavs are in it right now. They are deep into something that I don't know how they're going to get out of, and changes are coming. Lineup changes coming. A lot of potential trades being discussed right now. Never a dull moment covering this Cavs team. But here's me and Mike talking about Cavs, the Cavs trades, potentially getting George Hill, and we'll talk to you again on Thursday.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
All right, Mike, so we're here today. You're going to be on tomorrow's show as well, talking about Jay Crowder and J.R. Smith. The listeners, the podcast I've been teasing forever now will finally be coming to your earbuds on Thursday. But the big Cavs news yesterday, besides the fact that Isaiah Thomas is reportedly the one who like led the call-outs against Kevin Love, which is its own brand of absurdity, and I don't 100% even like really know what to make of that, is that the Cavs are interested in George Hill, and there have been some discussions. The first thing was Brian Windhorst talking about it on The Jump with Rachel Nichols and saying that there had been some discussions and had gotten somewhere. Then you have the report from Woj, who said that that this deal involves Channing Frye and involves Amon Shumpert, and that's sort of the salary you have to look at to make. Channing Frye has at $7-ish million expiring. Amon Shumpert's making about $10 million, and George Hill this season, in the first year of a deal with the Kings, is making $20 million in the first year of a three-year $57 million deal, with the last year, that 2019-20 season, only guaranteed for the $1 million of the $18 million if he is on through July 1st, 2019. So you let him go before that, you're not on the hook for that full $18 million. Mike, what do you make of the Cavs' interest in George Hill?
I mean, obviously, I understand their interest in George Hill. You know, it's been well publicized, I think, that the guard wing market is pretty thin in terms of, you know, trying to make upgrades. And, you know, George Hill is obviously one of those guys. He seems disgruntled in Sacramento. And so I understand it. I'm not entirely, you know, sure exactly what George Hill you're getting. He's been quite bad this season, but, you know, I think that it's probably right to grade players on a curve in Sacramento. You know, he's like 83rd in defensive RPM amongst point guards. You know, he has a strong negative defensive BPM. His steals and block numbers are kind of the same. The Kings are worse on defense, 4.4 points per 100 possessions with him on the floor. But, you know, over the past, his teams have been better with him on defense. He ranked 6th in defensive RPM last year, 12th 2 years ago. Obviously, he had the toe injury that bothered him last year in Utah. He hasn't been 100% healthy this year. So the question becomes, you know, which George Hill are you getting? Are you getting, you know, peak last year's George Hill, who was a really good player and kept the Jazz afloat while Gordon Hayward missed games at the beginning of the year? Or are you getting, you know, current George Hill that you've seen in Sacramento this year, who, outside of shooting the three ball extremely well, has kind of declined across the board?
I think you're right to wonder if what the residual effect of him playing in that Kings team is there. I think that it certainly has to be. He's been unhappy, and I think maybe he should have known better what he was getting into a little bit. I think that is kind of, I wonder if he sort of, like, I know the money is really good and he should take that, and it's a weird market for point guards, but I wonder, you know, if like he should have seen that kind of unhappiness coming. And, you know, we're only 2 months, 6 weeks removed from George Hill putting out the tweet where his name is Indiana George Hill, whatever that means. I don't know when he changed that or not. And then you have the angry emoji. So he's kind of like clearly not happy, at least in terms of how he communicate with NBA players, which is like functionally through middle school code reading. But I think you're right. I think if you want to sell yourself on this deal, if you want to say this is something that could help the Cavs, George Hill is someone who I think fits really, really nicely if he's kind of the Indiana-Utah type guy, where he's going to be a really good defender, or at least a solid defender. He's going to shoot well from threes. He's been a 40% three-point shooter each of the last few seasons, and at least four attempts a game. That's not terrible. It's not knockdown, but it's something teams would have to take account of when they're defending the Cavs. And he's also a good defender, and I think it's someone that could defend ones and twos, that could take some pressure on Isaiah. The question then kind of becomes, you know, how are you working him in, I think, is everything. He's not overly large. He's 6'3". You know, you're going to be getting into Isaiah's minutes, I think, for sure. I think that is an interesting thing. You're eating into JR, eating into Korver. I think this would mean you're not getting any more Jetty. I think this would be the time to kind of say, Jetty, it's time for you to go play in the G League a lot. I think this would have a push down the rotation, and I think getting off of Amon Shumpert's contract for a guy like George Hill is fine. I tweeted this. I think it's weird that you would no longer have anyone from the championship team that is credited with kind of improving the locker room, because Channing was kind of the last guy in that group. And then if he's gone, what else do you, like, you're still missing something. I don't hate it. I also don't think, no matter, George Hill could be the best version of himself. Look a lot like he did in Utah before he was a free agent and went to the Kings. And it might not matter that much, because he's not someone that I think tips the balance for them in any meaningful way against the Warriors, or maybe even in the Eastern Conference if the Cavs have these issues that we think are real.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you could still, as you say, get peak George Hill, I guess, whatever you want to consider peak George Hill, maybe somewhere between the Indiana and the Utah version. And I think I'd still have concerns in terms of just, you know, fit and exactly where you're going to put him out there. He is a guy that doesn't turn the ball over, which is positive. He's going to shoot the ball well from three. You can kind of see he's 42% on his last 660 attempts, 47% catch and shoot this year. But he is an on-ball guard in the way that he runs a lot of pick and rolls. When he's been at his best, he's been operating in the pick and roll. If you're going to add that to Isaiah and LeBron and Kevin Love, that's a lot of guys who are going to want the ball. You do get a guy who can get to the rim, but, you know, again, he's going to need the ball in his hands to do that. And I'm not sold on the idea that he can guard twos. He does have a long wingspan. He's only 6'3". You're looking at teams, even in the East, you're looking at a team, you know, like Toronto. You know, you got DeMar DeRozan on the wing. You know, he's a bigger, stronger guy than George Hill. How is that going to look? Obviously, if you're looking towards the finals, you have a guy in Klay Thompson who's 6'7". Is George Hill going to bother him, or Isaiah Thomas, if you're going to play George Hill on Stephen Curry? And then George Hill isn't a good positional rebounder for a point guard anyways. He's about average. So you're going to insert another guy into your starting lineup who's, grabbing 9-10% of rebounds with LeBron and Kevin Love out there, as well as Jay Crowder and Isaiah. And in Crowder and Isaiah, you have two guys who have already struggled a ton in terms of their defensive rebounding this year. You're not really going to solve that rebounding issue. I have concerns about his ability to guard twos on a nightly basis. I think that, he could be a decent offensive player if you were moving on from Isaiah Thomas, but kind of fitting next to him is a little questionable in my mind.
Yeah, I think you're right there. I think you're also right at pointing out that he's had a hard time defending twos. And I think if you specifically look at the type of twos the Cavs are going to face in the run-up to the finals, it's in the finals if they get there. You know, let's say they make the finals, that's Klay Thompson in all likelihood, or Steph Curry, and both of those are hard assignments. And if he's defending, you're not going to have Isaiah on Klay, so it's on Klay and the other guys are going to run out there. That's tough, I think, for George Hill. I think let's say Houston upsets Golden State. I mean, George Hill having to guard James Harden is tough. The Cavs maybe don't have someone exactly equipped. Maybe LeBron's doing that a lot, but it's tricky there. And then you're still having to have Isaiah guard, Chris Paul or something like that. You look in the East, you're going to see minutes in Boston where it's a guy, Terry Rozier is handleable, but it's also going to have Jason Tatum, who's been really, really good as a rookie, and Jaylen Brown, and those type of guys that are bigger and longer than George Hill. And if you look at Washington, Bradley Beal's been awesome this season. Considering Wall's injury, maybe the best player in the Wizards so far this year. And then Toronto, it's Kyle Lowry, who's a bigger guard, and then you have DeMar DeRozan, who's a very, very large brunting two guard. So these are not exactly good defensive assignments and matchups for George Hill. He's certainly better just playing that point role, but if you have Isaiah and you're not trading Isaiah, then you kind of have to play him at the two to make it worth it. It's complicated, and I don't love it. I think it could have some benefits. I think in a vacuum, maybe he helps you more than Channing and Amon Shumpert, but I don't think it's necessarily the big, tangible kind of deal the Cavs are hoping to make. I don't know if that deal is even out there, but I don't think George Hill is necessarily it.
Right, yeah. I mean, I think that if this is the only trade that the Cavs made, I think that would be disappointing, just in terms of kind of what you were looking for and the improvements that you were looking to make. One swing for George Hill isn't going to change the balance of much of anything. And I know that some people have responded in saying that, George Hill's certainly going to be better than J.R. Smith. And even if you accept that as true, I think that looking at these things in a binary, basically George Hill or J.R. Smith, doesn't acknowledge the reality that there are other options outside of George Hill. So is George Hill, for what you're giving up, going to be better than, you know, player X for the package that you would give up to get him? So I just think that you don't want to be reductive in the sense that, you know, you're just comparing George Hill versus J.R. Smith, because that's reducing your universe of possibilities in a non-realistic way.
100% agree. Well, you'll listeners hear more on J.R. Smith tomorrow. Mike and I are going to dive deep into the seasons that J.R. and Jake Carter have. But Mike, thank you so much for coming on and breaking down this George Hill information.
Absolutely.
And listeners, the second half of this podcast recap of Cavs Spurs. Hope you enjoy, and as you'll hear from Mike tomorrow.